Final preparation for a new school year, one without fall sports, and the United Way adapting to a unique need in the cities. It was just announced this week that the Summit League, the conference that Western Illinois University is a part of, will be postponing its fall sports. It's just one of the changes that's facing students here at Western in the coming semester. But the priority is safety. But what we know is it's going to be a very unusual year. We talked about that and a whole lot more with Western Illinois University Interim President Dr. Martin Abraham. I have to start with the obvious question. Is Western ready for the next semester?
Well, we think we are.
Yeah.
We'll probably figure out when we get there in 2 weeks that there were certain things that we missed, and we'll fix them on the fly, because quite frankly, with this pandemic, we're fixing everything on the fly. You know, everything changes on a daily basis, sometimes more than once a day. So you have a set of plans and you adjust your plans based on the reality on the ground as you get there. And we've become quite good at doing that in the past 6 months and trying to figure out how to do that all along. So we've got a pretty good set of plans. We feel real confident that everything's going to work out, and then we're prepared to adjust as we get there.
There are two areas of the greatest concern, and that has to do, of course, with the gathering, either in the classroom or in the dorm room. We've talked so much about the classroom, but let's start with the dorm room, because move-in day is coming up. That's got to be a time where you want to get it right.
Right. Well, move-in day is going to look a little different than it has in the past, right? In the past, we would have had just people showing up, and they move in, and they line up and queue up, and they go up to their rooms, they bring up groups of people, and it's not going to be like that this year. This year, every students have had to make appointments. They've called ahead, they've gotten a slot that they can utilize. You can go up to the room with you and, I believe, one helper at a time. And then you go up, it's the elevators are all one family at a time, and you've got your time slot, you can go up to the room and it's just that, and then you come, you know, parents go, and that's it, and that's done with it. And so we're spaced out starting on Wednesday next week and going through, probably through Sunday, we'll have people moving in at a time sequence so that we don't have large gatherings of people.
The real thing though is that the entire dormitory life, if not the entire college experience, is gatherings. It's a shared experience. That seems to be in some ways taken away for this class.
Well, it will be to an extent. Obviously, you can't gather in large groups. You can't get together and hug each other and do all these things that we've gotten familiar with doing. But people adapt, just like we've adapted. Under normal conditions, these chairs would be a lot closer. And we'd be a lot together a lot more. But we figured out a way to work it out. And I'm sure the students will as well. They'll figure out ways to work it out, and they'll be in small groups. And for classes, we'll have classes in small groups or very large classrooms with people spread out. So we have the adaptation. People are very flexible and very resilient, and I'm confident they'll do just fine.
And I wanted to talk about the classroom experience, because it has to be almost a hybrid, as you call it,
mm-hmm.
or a mix of in-class or out-of-class experiences. You guys had to turn on a dime in the spring semester of 2020.
That's right.
That must have taught your staff, your faculty, and your administrators so much as you're heading to 2020-2021.
Well, that's just it, right? We had to turn on a dime, so we learned how to adapt very quickly as we discovered things that we needed to do, and then adjusted on the fly. And we've become, as I said, we've become somewhat familiar and somewhat qualified at adjusting on the fly. And our classrooms are set up, so a classroom that typically would have accommodated 40 students, probably about 15 to 20 in there now, so that we have the proper distancing and students can sit apart from each other. And we've moved classes around so that we have more space in all of the classrooms and more time between the classes. That helps the students to get back and forth. That helps people to get in and out of the classrooms. All of these adaptations that we've put in place so that we just have more flexibility and more spacing of everything that we're doing and keeping people safe.
You have a campaign called Mask Up WIU.
I do.
It's more than a slogan?
Oh, it is. We have face coverings are required everywhere on campus. Every student will have, and I think I have mine with me. You'll get two of these. Very nice face masks, and they're accommodating. These are actually really neat because they're comfortable and they slide on and go right on over the ears, and they sit really well, and you can see that they work really well. And then you, you know, in the classroom, out when you're walking on campus, whenever you're around, we expect you to have the face covering on. Now, not in your residence hall room, that's you're allowed to take them off at that point. But other than that, we expect people to have their face coverings on. And we know face coverings are an important component of controlling the virus, and so we really encouraging people to utilize them to the maximum extent possible.
And the schools, not only Western, but other schools, St. Ambrose, I would point out, the Eastern Iowa Community Colleges also have similar programs, but there's an enforcement element that is there as well. What is Western's enforcement in case, well, let's start with a student and then go to a staff member if they say, no, I don't want to wear a mask?
Well, we've put the face covering in as part of our policy. So we have a policy statement that says you have to wear a face covering on campus. And we also have processes where students violate university policy. We have student conduct processes in place. If student is brought up on charges, then they could, you know, any level of conduct or sanctions could be installed against the student. And, you know, those range from all sorts of things up till, really, you could expel a student. I doubt we would expel a student for a face mask violation, but theoretically we could if they become belligerent and difficult about it. So we do have sanctions in place for the students and faculty and staff, quite frankly, as well. If you don't wear your face covering, you have, you know, you're required, faculty and staff are required to follow all university policies. And so if you don't, there's discipline that we can install based on failure to follow university policy.
Because it's that serious. The two things that I think every educational institution is looking at is the face mask and some extent of social distancing as two of the key pillars to safety in an educational environment.
Well, you're 100% right. Those are the critical pieces. And, you know, if we could do testing, that would be another element that would be a critical component of it. But you need to do testing very frequently because people are interacting frequently. And so you need testing that's not what we're currently doing. First of all, the current testing is just not sufficiently available. It's too expensive. You don't get a quick enough turnaround. So we need a different type of testing. One of the things that we have invested in at Western is a testing protocol. We have equipment on the way to be able to do some testing. Now, we're not going to be able to test everybody every couple of days, but we will be able to do testing of our students, faculty, and staff. And we're comfortable that, again, with the face mask policy, with the social distancing, with some level of testing, that we'll be able to keep our students and our faculty and staff safe and be able to maintain a viable semester.
The Summit Athletic Conference announcing that it is suspending its fall sports, a direct impact on Western Illinois University's athletics program this fall. It was a unanimous vote? I mean, was this something that you're in fully support of?
Yes, the Summit League vote was a unanimous vote. I am fully in support of it. I believe it's the right call to make. I mean, I feel very, very bad for the athletes. They work a lot. They work very hard to achieve what they've achieved. I wish that we could give them an experience that would be worthy of what they've worked for. But with so many challenges in terms of competing at this point and traveling and going out and interacting in very close contact, it's just not a situation where we really feel comfortable that we can keep them safe. And, you know, I know that in the near future, we'll be able to do a lot better because we'll have better testing protocols, we'll have better processes in place. We've actually not officially canceled the fall. What we've really done is postponed it, and I'm hoping that we can do a very viable spring semester of fall sports along with our typical spring sports, and we can do everything to support our athletes at that time.
You've seen other conferences do pretty much the same thing, so was it kind of a no-brainer?
No, it was definitely not a no-brainer. This is some of those very hard decisions that you're called on to make. You realize that it's how impactful it is. I mean, we have 400 student athletes on campus. Some number of those, and I don't know the precise number, that compete in fall sports, but a fairly significant number of those that are really at the university not just to get a high-quality education, but also to compete in athletics at the highest level of competition. And we're substantially impacting their ability and what they've come to the university for. It's not a no-brainer. It's a very, very difficult choice to make. But in all reality, this is, we just don't feel like we can give them the type of quality experience that they would really, that they deserve based on how hard they've worked. And it's really a lot safer for them, better for us as a university to help move this into the spring. We think we're going to be able to do a first-class job in the spring term, and we're optimistic we'll do a great job for them.
We often talk about the college experience as being the dorm life, the educational experience in athletics, and we sometimes forget about all the other, as we used to call them in high school, extracurriculars, but the clubs, the music program, the drama, the arts, that's going to have a radical impact in 2021 as well.
Mm-hmm. Yes, you're absolutely right. And we're figuring a lot of that out at this point. A lot of the clubs are probably still going to be able to do things. They're going to be able to operate, of course, differently in the fall than they would under normal conditions. But just like everybody else, we have virtual opportunities and virtual events, and people can be engaged in those virtual activities, and the clubs can organize around those virtual events as well. Our rec center continues to operate. They've been operating since March. Again, it's all virtual. We stream things out, we run competitions, we run virtual 5Ks. People have adapted to that. We're not unique in doing it. And we'll figure out how to proceed on some of those activities as well.
And as you know, there's juniors or incoming seniors in high school right now that are looking for a college to go to. Western has offered virtual tours. You have opened up in so many different ways social media to answer parents and student potential student questions. Is recruitment especially difficult right now?
It is. It's very difficult to be interacting with the students in the way that we can't interact in the ways that we have in the past. So we've developed new opportunities and new activities. Admissions counselors, for example, that might have gone to visit a high school now might do a virtual visit to a high school, but then they'll reach out to 20 or 30 students in a one-on-one basis, talking with them, helping them to understand what Western can offer, and providing some interactions and some qualifications about what we're doing.
And lastly, what do you say to the class of 2021? You feel bad for the class of 20. Their graduation really was non-existent in so many different ways. You did the best you could. Now the class of 2021 kind of sitting there going, wow, are we going to be next?
Well, and I hope that they won't be. I hope that by the end of the fall semester, as we get into the holiday season, that a lot of the challenges we have will be behind us. I know that there's new testing coming down pretty much on a daily basis. As I indicated, if we can get to what they call point of care testing, if we can get to a spot where we can do point of care testing on a regular and recurring basis, we can really get in front of the virus and really be able to do a lot of good in terms of being able to have events and having activities again and bringing back athletics and these sorts of things. So we're optimistic that by the spring we'll be able to have maybe not completely normal semester, but a much closer to normal semester than we'll be able to have in the fall. And we hope that we'll give them the opportunity and the experiences that they deserve coming to a university like Western. One thing that I do really want to add, because it's incredibly important to understand, this is, you know, I get to come here and I get to talk to you and tell you about what we're doing and these sorts of things, but I'm just one person, and there are a whole lot of people at the university that have worked incredibly hard to be able to get us to a spot that we can open up and have real classes and participate. And I can't go a day without thanking them enough for all the things that they do, the people that are engaged in making this happen, and ensuring that we can have a quality semester for our students. They've worked phenomenally hard, and I do want to make sure whenever I get an opportunity to get out and speak about what we're doing at Western, that I recognize all the great work that so many people have done to bring this about, and really appreciate everything that they've done and the extra mile, not just mile, but miles that they have gone in order to bring this about. We couldn't possibly do this without all of the staff and the faculty, and getting them on board has been phenomenal. So I really appreciate everything they've done.
Dr. Martin Abraham, interim president of Western Illinois University. In a moment, one of the Quad City's largest fundraising efforts is rethinking its operations. We'll have that in just a moment. But first, going out and about with Laura Adams.
This is Out and About through August 17th. The Fig Carnegie Art Museum holds free virtual yoga classes starting August 6th. Thursday nights with Circa 21 continues. Entertainment by some of the most talented performers in the Quad Cities. Floatzilla, the largest paddle sport festival on the nation's greatest river, the Mississippi, takes place August 15th. Sign up and get paddling. On August 15th from 9 to 2, check out a pop-up sidewalk sale at the Iron and Grain Coffee House in East Moline. Or get creative for the online Quad City Arts 4th Annual Chalk Art Fest. Photos of completed work must be submitted by August 28th at 3 p.m. to Quad City Arts. For more information, visit WQPT.org.
The Quad Cities is all in this together. We take care of one another, because that's who we are. So mask up, wash your hands, stay informed, and continue to support our QC businesses. We rally together while staying apart, so that in time, we can get back to the very best version of the Quad Cities.
Thank you, Laura. Musicians are doing what they can just to get their music still out. Mo Carter has actually recorded a number of sessions on YouTube called Solitary Sessions. It's a great name, but she entertained us before the COVID-19 pandemic hit, and she was at Moline's Black Box Theater. Here's Mo Carter with Crumbled.
Thank you.
That's Mo Carter and Crumbled. The COVID-19 pandemic has affected so many different parts of our society, and that includes fundraising efforts from charitable groups. And when the charities lose, down the road we all lose. The United Way is adding to its fall campaign and is starting its effort actually earlier than before. United Way President and Chief Executive Officer Renee Gellerman joined us to talk about those challenges. The United Way changed its emphasis on what it supported a few years ago. How has the pandemic actually changed that? Is that changing your philosophy in any way?
Well, we've spent the last few months really evaluating what the emergency needs are at this time. And so we've been responding to those. But really, the building blocks for opportunity are education, income, and health. And so our focus remains in those areas right now.
Because the United Way was doing that more to look at long-term community effect.
Yeah.
And it's been successful for you.
Yes, and we still need to. I mean, that's the way we're going to strengthen our community. But at the moment, we have pivoted a bit to really respond to recover and rebuilding.
And it's called the Fall Sprint that you're into right now. Tell me a little bit about this.
We just kicked off our campaign early, 2 months early. The needs are big, and it really demands bold leadership and courageous leadership. And we've got to get out there and inspire more people to give the United Way and other nonprofit organizations to respond to the high need.
This early sprint, the early fundraising, about $2.5 million you're seeking, where does this go? I mean, what is being targeted immediately?
We are targeting getting kids back on track in school, helping people get back to their jobs, financial stability, things like rent, and even in some cases, people are in need of formula and baby wipes. And
yeah, because if you think about it, when you think of your long-range United Way goals, had to do so much with reading and getting people to be almost self-sufficient, children to be able to build their lives even stronger. A pandemic and an economic recession really gives you a strong crosswind if you're a young family.
Yeah, you've got people that have lost their jobs or laid off. We've got people that need help today that have never asked for help in their lives. So we're doing more, all we can, to raise some money to help people in a time of need. And I believe this community is going to rally. We always do.
Well, and as you know, in a time of need, everyone is hurting, and the chances for greater contribution can be tough to get. I want to talk about that in a moment, but it's so important to point out that there is an anonymous matching amount of $300,000 that's available. That's exciting in itself.
Yeah, this anonymous donor came forward, really believes in our community, and believes that people will respond to this challenge. So $300,000 for every new or increased dollars given to the United Way, they will match dollar for dollar.
And what will that mean? I mean, that's a huge contribution.
That could make our early sprint about 40% more than we raised last year at this time.
But as I was setting up, is the fact that when you're in a recession or if you're in a tough time, the charitable giving a little more difficult.
It is challenging. We work with 350 companies every year for employee campaigns. We know that's going to be impacted with the layoffs and companies that are facing their own economic challenges. And so we're going to do all that we can to be creative and innovative. And for those that can step up, we're asking them to step up and stretch themselves.
Now, you have already got a COVID-19 rebuilding fund that's already handed out $150,000. Tell me a little bit about that fund and the effectiveness of it.
Those funds are used to really supplement evolving needs in the community. Things like our daycare centers that need the support to position themselves with the health and safety issues in their organizations. People who want to give to that were able to distribute immediately.
You say that you're real proud of the community and that they do step up. Describe what this time is. I mean, you went through 2008 and 2009 into 2011 when we had a very tough Great Recession. How does this compare to other fundraising years?
I think it's going to be challenging for all nonprofits. And so we're looking at this as really not only is this a once-in-a-generation crisis, but it's a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity to tool or retool solutions to problems that we've put off too far. And I believe in our community we have overcome a lot of challenges, either man-made or things like COVID, and I believe we're up for the challenge and that we will get through this.
Now, as you were saying, the United Way is really emphasizing a few areas that I want to point out, and one is education. Is that a big concern with so many out-of-classroom experiences occurring right now, that we've got an entire grade of students that might not have had the same opportunities that they would have normally had?
It's a significant concern for parents, for educators, for business leaders, and it is an area that we're really looking into on how can we problem solve and mobilize the community to help. The academic slide is very alarming, and it really is affecting the most vulnerable in our community, and we've got to do something, and we need the community's help to do that.
Have you been able to measure it yet? Because let's be honest, mm-hmm. since the United Way campaign had really targeted education, mm-hmm. I think we saw more retention of students in classrooms. We've mm-hmm. seen an improvement in the last few years. Are you worried about what's happened over the last few months?
We're really worried about third grade reading, about kids being yeah. ready for kindergarten, about high school graduation rates, those kids that were missing school, what's happening to them right now. We aren't able to measure right now, but what we do know that there are some school districts that don't have, 50% of their families don't have access to reliable internet services. That's going to contribute to some of the challenges as well.
The other area that's so important, of course, and you touched on it, was healthcare as well. Mm-hmm. Even mental health care has been a significant part of mm-hmm. the United Way effort. That, mm-hmm. too, COVID-19 is only mm-hmm. exacerbating right now.
Yeah, I think people, you know, with the anxiety and the stress over COVID-19, the loss of jobs, what's happening with their kids, has really affected the mental health of many people. And our COVID-19 fund has been able to support agencies that have had to retool their way of treating individuals and provide the support and care that those people need.
So right now, how can somebody help out? Obviously, opening up your wallet, some people could do it easier than others. Mm-hmm. Let's talk about that.
Well, obviously, give to the United Way. And then provide leadership that inspires your neighbors and your coworkers to do the same as they can. And with those funds, we will find and fund solutions to get kids back on track in school, people financially stable, and provide the health care that individuals need. People can volunteer. We have all kinds of virtual opportunities on our website. They could do hygiene drives or book drives, and we'll provide those, make sure those supplies get to people who need them. And really, most importantly, I think, be a champion of our community. Commit to that we are going to rebuild and recover and have a stronger Quad Cities.
United Way President and Chief Executive Officer Renee Gellerman. On the air, on the radio, on the web, and on your mobile device. Thanks for taking some time to join us as we talk about the issues on the cities.